Welcome into the Nuts. I'm your host, Amal Shah, alongside Mike Palm. Terrific Friday afternoon in Augusta National. We are starting to see some waves going through as Justin Rose, currently atop the leaderboard, Mike. Yesterday finished at -7, but he's currently at -6. He's +1 for the day today through 15. He's 8-1 to win the tournament. Mark Leishman sitting at 16-1, who's at -5, and he's done for the day. And also Bernard Weisberger at 33-1, who's currently at -4. He finished up with a terrific day of -6 today. So we're seeing some names that probably were not expected at the top of the leaderboard right now.
Yeah, both those guys, Leishman and Weisberger, had a great round today. Impressive scores. I think as the afternoon goes in Georgia and it warms up a little bit, the scoring is going to continue to improve. I'm looking at Jordan Spieth right now, who's 3-under through 10, 2-under today. He seems to really be stroking the ball well, and all we know is he's the best putter in the game right now. So if he can be on the green, he's got a shot. We're looking at him at about 6-1 to win the tournament.
Yeah, Harmon right now is tied for third at -4. Also, now some names you'll start to recognize. Tony Finau at -3. Justin Thomas, -3. You mentioned Jordan Spieth at -3. Also, Woo Kim, Champ, and Matsuyama all there, and Webb Simpson all sitting at -3. So pretty crowded, even though Justin Rose currently has a 3-shot lead. Some opportunity for some guys to make some headway, as they're currently, several of the names I mentioned, either starting out probably about a third of the way through the course or about halfway through.
Yeah, Finau sitting at 14-1, 5-under through 12, was 2-over yesterday. Impressive. Impressive to be tied for fourth right now at 3-under.
You know, I think one of the things that gets overlooked in golf, because it happens all the time in the NFL, and basketball it gets overlooked, I think, in hockey. We see it. One play makes a game. You know, in the NFL, you might see something. People look to the fourth quarter, might be a play in the second quarter. But in golf, it's the same thing. You mentioned Tony Finau. Missed a couple of shots here or there yesterday. All of a sudden, turns things around. And the capability of all of these guys in the tournament, not just the guys at the top, it really makes it for an intriguing weekend.
And you get these par fives that are reachable, right? So yeah. You have eagle opportunities there. And then you get the tricky holes, 15, 16, where double bogeys are possible as well. So there's great scoring swings at Augusta, as we've always seen, which probably makes it the most exciting tournament of the year.
Yeah, this really is, and I think just the prestige that goes with it, winning the green jacket, being a major tournament, along with the difficulty of the course in terms of the greatness that's required to perform at this level. And then on top of it, you look at a condensed field, so you don't necessarily have some people that would be making a charge in the first day or two that are kind of unknown commodities. You have proven guys here.
Yeah, we're looking at Justin Rose, who gave a stroke back today so far to come a little bit back to the field at 8-1 right now. I talked about Spieth. He's dropping down to 550. Could have got him earlier in the day at 8-1. So take a look. Patrick Reed, past champion, 14-1 right now. Leishman, after that incredible round today, 16-1. And of course, Matsuyama, who had a solid day yesterday, at 18-1. And Webb Simpson, 2-under right now, 20-1.
So the odds that Mike just gave you are live current odds as the tournament is ongoing. What surprised me a little bit with JT sitting at +450 and Spieth at +550 is that Thomas and Spieth are both currently -3, but Thomas has played one more hole already today. I'm just surprised they don't have the same odds currently.
Yeah. Interesting, Dustin Johnson, 28-1. He had played 11 straight rounds under par until yesterday when he double bogeyed 18 and finished 2-over.
It's still a guy that has an opportunity to be able to make a run. You know, it's never out of it. I can tell you right now, the only guy who's probably not going to make a run is John Rahm, but that's another story. It's amazing to me. People constantly bet on him. Maybe in 20 years, he'll be Sergio Garcia part two from Spain and finally win a tournament when nobody expects it.
Yeah, you're a guy that loves the no on him in the majors, right?
Absolutely.
The yes, no odds.
Yeah, it's exactly. I just remember Brent and I talk about it all the time. He mentioned John Rahm, and I'm like, this guy doesn't win anything when it's a major tournament, and that's been the issue with him so far. Any names that have either stood out to you or disappointed you thus far?
No, not so far. I mean, things have pretty well gone to course here. I just keep looking at Spieth because if he's going to hit all the greens, I mean, I don't think there's anybody in the game that's a better putter from 15 to 30 feet. And I think you can say that over the last 8 to 10 years on the tour, he has been the best putter we've seen out there. And you know, with these greens, how hard these greens are and these pin placements, putting is so important.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Right now, we're looking at a cut of +3. Some notable names right now that don't appear to make the projected cut. Phil Mickelson, of course, Sergio Garcia, I mentioned a moment ago. Rory McIlroy, Matt Kuchar, several names along the way. Jason Day also struggling at +5. So a lot of names that may not be there for Saturday.
Yeah, it's interesting. And the cut will move, right? It's going to be a moving target. And it might go to +2 as the day goes on and the scores increase and we see the afternoon conditions probably improve here.
Yeah, something just to pay attention to as you're looking to maybe bet these matchups or looking at the futures market in this. We'll keep you posted throughout the day here on VSiN as the tournament continues to change and the leaderboard continues to move up and down. We'll let you know what's going on there. You are watching The Nuts. I'm Amal Shah alongside Mike Palm. Welcome in. We're going to have a great show today. Matt Youmans is going to join us in about 30 minutes. You know him from My Guys in the Desert. Does a terrific job as the VSiN Point Spread Weekly editor. He's going to join us to talk Masters. But we'll get into the Masters a little bit more in depth when Matt joins us. But real quickly, Mike, just want to touch upon Justin Rose and the performance he's had so far. Really impressive. And I know our staff here, some of the guys behind the scenes, have had Justin Rose at 129-1 and 134-1 to win.
Yeah, a great call by them. And, of course, the great round, he picks the stroke back up now, even through 15 today, a two-shot lead over Mark Leishman, who's in the house at 5-under, and as well as Weisberger, who's finished his round 6-under for the day, 4-under. So it'd be nice if Rose can pick up a couple strokes here and give these guys a great weekend sweat.
Yeah, absolutely right. And Leishman currently at -5. He had a terrific day today, went -5 today. Yesterday was at even. He's 20-1 to win it. Rose, as I mentioned, +650. You have Tony Finau 12-1. Justin Thomas now down to 4-1. Really just performing at an elite level. He's a guy that's expected to be able to really make a charge for the green jacket on Sunday. The guy that you're really riding in this one, Jordan Spieth, currently sitting at -2 for the day, -3 so far in this tournament. He's through 11. He shot a 71 yesterday.
Yeah, he's at 6-1 right now currently, as the live odds would be a DraftKings to win the green jacket here this year. So watch him. I'd like to see him get to 5-under today, pick up two more strokes here on the backside and put himself solidly in contention, maybe be in a top 4 or 5 spot heading into Saturday.
I love what you said right there. I was going to ask you this. As a golf bettor, when you're in a tournament like this, are you sitting there saying, okay, I need to be within X number of strokes, or what are you looking at, or how are you kind of gauging where your comfort level is on a player?
I'm really trying to project out what round he needs to shoot, and then with the rest of the field, where he needs to be within 2 or 3 shots of the lead going into Saturday. Now, remember, I don't bet golf every week like Matty Youmans does, or Brady or Wesson, that terrific show Long Shots that VSiN debuted a couple years ago, and how well they've done it, being able to pick out winners and give winners in matchups. But in these majors, you know, I'm going to do this 3 or 4 times a year, try to isolate guys that I think have a good chance to win and are in form. I mean, I do that in a lot of sports, right? You're looking for somebody who's in form. Look at their round two. Watch how they're playing. Look at how are they doing on their short game. How is their putter, right? Because that's going to carry over into the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely right. Just something to take note of as you're looking to make some wagers on either the head-to-head matchups or, of course, the futures, which are still available, whether at DraftKings or elsewhere, in terms of the ongoing throughout the course of the tournament. Let's switch gears a little bit. We're going to get to the NFL draft. I want to get into some notable names, Mike. But before we get into all that, speculation now that the Atlanta Falcons are potentially looking to move the number 4 pick in the draft.
Yeah, I saw that, and maybe that makes sense. I mean, they're pretty well set at the quarterback position. I mean, you don't want to draft wide receiver that high, right?
Right,
so when you're looking at number 4, they're probably looking at, you know, in a little bit of a rebuild in that division, looking to pick up some picks for the future or gather more second and third round picks this year.
Are you a believer in Matt Ryan still? I like him. I don't know if you're as high on him as maybe
you're,
I might.
You're higher on him than I am.
Yeah, I didn't tell you how high am I am on him. I can't even say it. But the point is, I still think he's a serviceable guy. You have Julio Jones, who's still, to me, a top 5 receiver. Calvin Ridley and him are as good of a combo as there is in the NFL.
Yeah. I mean, he had the one terrific year, and is that the one-off when they went to the Super Bowl? And if he doesn't take a sack and kick a field goal there, they're going to beat the Patriots in that Super Bowl. I mean, they've never really recovered from another Kyle Shanahan, no points in the fourth quarter in a Super Bowl there. I mean, it's been a little bit of a downward spiral. I don't think he's on a downward trajectory in his career. I would more argue that his cap was never as high as maybe people thought it was.
That's a fair statement, you know, but the other thing is people always talk about coaching, and they always wanted to give New England credit for coaching with Bill Belichick, but how come then Matt Ryan doesn't get a pass when he's got a terrible coach in Dan Quinn?
Well, he's had some different offensive coordinators there that have been pretty good over the years in Atlanta.
And it's not like Shanahan's applying for Mensa membership when it comes to game clock management. I mean, forget what he did in Atlanta. There's been multiple times in San Francisco he's not exactly managed the game clock properly.
Well, just in that taking the tie against the Seahawks was
taking the tie, the Monday Night Football game against Green Bay, where he could have run the football. Instead, they throw the ball, it's intercepted, and AR-12 goes right down the field and gets a field goal before they even get to overtime. So a lot of question marks there, but I can appreciate where you're coming from in terms of Matt Ryan and what you believe in him. But I believe this is the best move for this team to kind of trade down, accumulate picks, because they need to get better on defense. That's the first area.
Yeah. Matt Ryan's had a lot of weapons. Let's not forget. I mean, he's been blessed with receivers and tight ends and through the years. So, I mean, he's had the tools there, and they've been a productive offense during during his career. But you're right. They've got to get a lot more solid on the defensive side. But you can't give up 27, 28 points a game and expect to win a division.
No, you're absolutely right. But one guy that's going to help an offense this year is going to be Kyle Pitts, tight end out of Florida. Mike, when you look at this guy, he's an all-airport team guy, right? You want him first one off the plane, 6'6", 246, had 100 receptions and 1,492 yards receiving, 18 touchdowns during his college career at Florida. Really a tremendous athlete with a tremendous catch radius.
That's what impresses me about him. And the quarterback he had in Trask doesn't throw the most catchable ball. I mean, Trask tends to really throw line drives, and Pitts was able to have soft hands, especially down there near the goal line, and be so productive. And, I mean, that's where the games are won and lost in the NFL, right? It's all about the red zone efficiency. Yeah. Games are going to move up and down the field between the 30s, between the 20s. Are you able to convert touchdowns instead of field goals in the NFL? This guy invaluable in those situations at the goal line.
Yeah, you think about him. To me, he reminds me a little bit of a Travis Kelce type, one of those great tight ends that can really catch the ball, make some plays after the catch. Odds to be drafted third overall, and Pitts is 50-1. Odds to be a top five pick right now is showing minus 125. So some interesting numbers there for Kyle Pitts in terms of what you see there.
So when you're going to look at those two, you got to project it out, right? The quarterbacks are going to go 1, 2, 3, obviously 50-1 for the 49ers to pick him third. We assume, obviously, the Jags and Jets are going to take quarterbacks at 1 and 2. But right. Then that leaves him still favored at 125 to be fourth or fifth. So, you know, the Bengals are going to take an offensive lineman, in my opinion, right? The kid from Oregon. That would mean that he's minus 150 to go to the Falcons if you isolate that.
I don't think he's going that high.
I don't agree with that either.
Yeah.
I would fade that. I'd go the other way.
Yeah, to me, it just doesn't make sense. I think we're pretty much set. The first three teams are going to go quarterback. The fourth pick is probably going to go Atlanta. They could trade down.
And if you said no on that, then it would be what, plus 101 on the 12-cent line?
Plus 101 there on the 12-cent line. You're absolutely right. You know, to me, I think he's a guy that can make a difference for a team in the red zone. Depending on which team gets him, he could have an immediate impact, especially if he's surrounded by an experienced receiving core with a good quarterback.
We have seen tight ends go in the top 10, yeah. Right? Frequently, I mean, they draft every Iowa tight end in the top 10, it seems.
Exactly. Only position outside of offensive line.
That's right.
Yeah. Speaking of which, let's go to quarterbacks and how much of an impact they could have. Zach Wilson, now, I don't think you're as high on him as maybe I am. 6'3", 210 out of BYU. Very nice job in terms of completion percentage, nearly 68 at BYU. Almost 7,700 yards there. 56 touchdowns to 15 INTs. Odds to be the first pick, 13-1. Odds to be the second pick, minus 2,000. Odds to be the third pick, 14-1.
But you cite when we discuss Zach Wilson and whether I like Mac Jones better than right. Zach Wilson, his running ability.
Correct.
Do you think that his running ability will be as valuable in the NFL as it was in college playing for BYU?
No, but here's the thing. I would consider him a poor man's Kyler Murray. Not quite as good as the Roadrunner, but in terms of maneuverability, he's very effective, can keep plays alive. I think he's a little bit more mobile and agile in today's game. That really makes it tough for a defense to stop. You still have not figured out a way for teams to really contain great mobile quarterbacks.
Yeah. I think, you know, from a situation where you're going to use him to run the ball
right.
as a running back, that's just not going to happen in the NFL. I mean, Zach Prescott's a tremendous running quarterback. There's going to be very few times he's going to keep it on the read option just because of the durability factor. And these linebackers hitting you, you won't be around for long in the NFL. So that game really goes away, right? You're not going to see Jalen Hurts running the ball 12, 15 times a game either. Because you can't do it in the NFL.
Well, it's good for the safeties and the corners that Jalen's not running the ball because he can pound some people.
He's a big boy.
He really is. But let me tell you something where I disagree with you on the comparison to Dak Prescott, because Dak is not as fleet of foot as Zach Wilson. I think Zach Wilson, if you utilize him the way Kyler Murray has been used, he can be very dangerous. Get him outside of the pocket in certain situations. And I'm not talking about running when you think of a Lamar Jackson. I'm talking about in certain situations, you have a third down and two, little fake handoff, QB waggle left. Now he's got a run pass option. He maybe throws it to a tight end that's coming out, and you have an option there. He pumps fakes, picks up 2 yards. I'm telling you, when you look at his speed, I think it's a bit deceptive. He may not be necessarily the fastest guy, but he's got good football speed.
I probably need to go back and watch more tape on him because I really only saw him play a couple of times. Most notably that game against Coastal Carolina when they matched that game up, I got to see that whole game.
Yeah.
Whereas I got to see Mac Jones almost every week, right?
Well,
so maybe
exactly.
I'm biased in that fact that I've seen a lot more action on Mac Jones than I have on Zach Wilson.
Yeah, but it's hard to downgrade Mac Jones. He was tremendous in every game, mm-hmm. right? There was a point during the season you thought maybe he's going to drop off a little bit, and you brought up the Coastal Carolina game. I think that's one negative you can point to Zach Wilson. If he's worthy of being the number two pick, he should have been able to, in essence, carry his team against the Chanticleers.
Yeah, and that was a tremendous. That I think that was a top five college football game all year.
Yeah, it really was.
It really was. Two evenly matched teams, a lot on the line, and you know, really two decent defenses as well. And that game, which played very fast in the first half, really settled down in the second half and became a defensive battle. Zach Wilson wasn't really able to deliver the knockout punch to Coastal Carolina.
No, he really wasn't. And I think that was one of the things that if you were grading him negatively, I can appreciate that perspective, because to me, that's a scenario where you can sit there and say, hey, you're playing inferior competition from the Sun Belt and you couldn't get it done. So that's something that's easy to see. People are criticizing Zach Wilson for that. I think that's one thing that can be you can be critical of. A player that probably doesn't have much criticism, and rightfully so, I thought he made one of the best decisions we've seen in a long time in terms of was Najee Harris staying at Alabama and coming back for his senior year, and he really improved his draft stock.
Look, this guy is such a home run hitter. You know, you play these Alabama games and teams, you know, they're hanging around. You hand the ball off to Najee Harris and he goes 75 yards and boom, the game opens up like that. To the eye test, he doesn't appear to be that fleet of foot. But there's not a lot of guys that run him down from these defensive backfields in college. And he's so durable and so strong. And, you know, to have all those weapons at the receiver position and then be able to hand the ball off to a guy like this, I can see where you say Mac Jones had so many tools around him, it made it easy.
You know, if you go back and look at Najee Harris, I'm going to give you a comparison to a wide receiver at Alabama, Julio Jones. If you go back when Alabama had Jones, he never really got tackled. He got pushed out of bounds. And Najee's the same thing. Yeah, he might get tackled if you got some D tackles or DNs in there. But he was so tough to bring down. I mean, there were times you're just kind of forcing him or you go low at his legs and that's the only time you could get him. I mean, this guy is an absolute workhorse. He's an absolute beast, 6'2", 230 pounds. I just think because the downgrading of running backs in terms of value, he's probably not getting as much credit in terms of how impactful he was for Alabama.
I agree with you. And I think he's going to be a terrific pro, actually.
I'm with you. I mean, just another stable, long line of guys from Alabama in terms of their ability to perform at the next level. I want to give you some quick numbers on him. In his career, had 638 carries, 3,843 yards, 46 touchdowns. Had a stellar career, winning two national titles.
You must be in favor of or willing to play this prop. Will he be the first running back drafted at -125?
Normally, I would say yes with you, but depends on a team. If a team runs a lot of screens, I think Travis Etienne might be more impactful because Travis Etienne's a faster back. He's a guy that could be more likely to hit a home run. And so I think when you look at it from that perspective, it depends on the team. But I would lean towards Najee Harris because I think he's a guy you can plug in from day one who can get the ball 25 times a game and really carry the work.
Absolutely. He's a 20 to 25 rush back a game. You feed him the ball. He's going to be very, very durable. But Etienne is an explosive player as well. And was unsung as how important Etienne was to that Clemson offense.
I think they're going to really feel the impact this year. I, as great as Lawrence was, to me, the most valuable player, and you see it, he won ACC Player of the Year a couple of times. Mm-hmm. Travis Etienne was just unbelievable. Might have been a third time. I can't remember last year who won the ACC Player of the Year, but he was unreal in terms of what he was able to do. But to me, Najee Harris is a guy that's a real workhorse, can carry the mail, and I think he can really deliver for this team. First non-quarterback to be drafted, 100-1. It's probably going to go towards a defensive player or an offensive lineman.
Yeah, I think the offensive line will be the first
player. That's true.
It depends what the Falcons do, right?
Exactly,
what are the Falcons going to do it for, or are the Falcons going to be it for?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, so much speculation, and I can see why a lot of times books are a little bit fearful of booking these things because they're not sure who's going to go where.
It just seems, and I speak this, it seems like it's just set up for insider information. I mean, other things that we're booking are based on performance on the field, athletic performance that's measured by objective standards, right? This is about guessing what somebody's going to pick. Even when you put up the odds for MVP or Rookie of the Year, that it's a public vote, right? Yeah. I mean, it's not something that somebody decides, hey, this is what this team wants to take, and they know before everybody else does. So there's just that susceptibility to it.
I want to ask you a few questions right now. I'll give you options. You're on the board. You're selecting. Najee Harris or Travis Etienne?
I take Najee Harris because I think you can put on your team a third down back or a changeup back like Pollock at Dallas that can do that, can run screens for you or be more of a receiver out of the backfield.
For me, there's not even a pause. Mm-hmm. It's Najee Harris all day.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a simple choice there. I just said Etienne in terms of the draft though, because the type of team and what they're going to, how they're going to utilize him. Also want to go to Kyle Pitts, tight end, Ja'Marr Chase, wide receiver. Ja'Marr Chase didn't play last year. Kyle Pitts really showed out in some of the biggest games for Florida.
And that's the problem for me. If I'm drafting, I haven't seen Ja'Marr Chase in a year.
Right.
Right. And what kind of shape is he in? How long is it going to take him to get back into the flow of it? Is he going to be ready to go week one? I would go with the tight end from Florida.
That's a fair argument. Now, do you give it a bonus, the fact that he didn't have 1 year of wear and tear? He's not a running back, so it may not be as much, right?
I think it's a less of a bonus than it is a detraction that he didn't play.
Quarterbacks, we're going to give you three options. Mm-hmm. Zach Wilson, Mac Jones, Justin Fields. Give me the order who you would take.
Mac Jones, Zach Wilson, Justin Fields.
Wow, okay.
I rank that in order of accuracy.
That's fair. I mean, to me, Mac Jones is probably more accurate than Trevor Lawrence. That's the one thing. As well as Lawrence has thrown the ball in times, I think Mac Jones, I can make a case, was more accurate.
Let me ask you about fitting in the New York with the New York media, because obviously the Jets have the second pick. Do you think it's easier for a Zach Wilson to go to New York and fit in, who didn't have as much scrutiny playing, you know, in Provo, or somebody like Mac Jones, who has had the national spotlight on him every week playing at Alabama?
I think that's true, but, you know, Mac Jones is a guy from Jacksonville. He goes to Alabama, plays in Tuscaloosa, and they were in the spotlight, but there's nothing prepares you for New York, right? There's nothing. Unless you're MJ, I don't think there's too many people that can step out on the stage and just smoothly transition that. LeBron James or Michael Jordan are two guys that come to mind. But other than that, I think it's a difficult transition when you're getting sitting there, every single thing is scrutinized.
We've seen so many guys that couldn't do it in baseball, right?
Yeah.
You know, Sonny Gray couldn't do it. Yeah. Frankie didn't. They don't want to pitch in the big markets. They want to pitch in the smaller markets.
Absolutely right. Something to keep in mind depending on who the Jets select in the draft. When we come back, we're going to go behind the bets. Let's see what Mike Palm's got on tap for this weekend. That's next. Welcome back into the nuts. What did I miss here, Mike, during the break? I see you are a producer and you were both laughing. I don't even know what's going on.
I didn't know what that music was.
I thought we had a budget cut and we went to some music that somebody queued up back there on their own.
I thought it was Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Well, let's hope we don't have one tonight. Let's go behind the bets here. I understand you're going across the pond one more time, going to France this time.
Yeah, today.
Today, okay.
Lille, my team Lille, coming off a big game against the PSG on Sunday where they shut them out 1-0. We saw PSG go to Germany, and as you predicted, a high-flying game, 3-2, they upset Bayern. Lille just shut them out. Very difficult side to score against. Seven of their last nine clean sheets. Now they're on top of the league, the top of the table in League One now with 66 points, three ahead of PSG, who has also played 31 matches. Look, they play Metz, who's a middle-of-the-pack team. They're in ninth place. These are important games for them to get 3 points here. They want to win this league, win the French League One. I think it's a good opportunity to pick up 3 points today. You could lay a goal at a -110. I prefer to lay the 170 on the three-way that they're going to win the match because I think this could very well be a 1-0 game.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that they had that successful win on Sunday. I think it was last Sunday against PSG. Did a terrific job in that one. So, like your play here, -170 in this one. What time does this game go?
This game is going to go just after noon our time.
Okay, so not too far off. Yep. In about 30 minutes here. Good opportunity if people are interested in getting involved in that one. I've got a play, and I'm still going to stick with it. It's going to be the New York Rangers and New York Islanders. I like the Islanders here. This team has been on fire. I wasn't expecting Varlamov to go in net, but no big deal. He's going to go tonight. Comes in with a 16-7-3 record. He's got a 2.1 goals against. But, Mike, when you look at the New York Islanders at home this year, 17-1-2 in 20 games. Think about that for a second. They're winning 85% of their games at home. This team has been outstanding. Rangers on the other end, not as strong when they go on the road right now. Currently 9-9-2. So you see they're not as effective away from home. Doing a decent job there, but just winning 45% of their games away from MSG. I love the Islanders in this spot. When you look at them, the Islanders are only giving up 2.3 goals per game. To me, this team has been unbelievable. They've only given up 90 goals in 40 games this year so far. The VGK Golden Knights are a little bit shorter at 88, but they've also played two less games.
It's amazing the effect Barry Trotz has on teams.
He's unbelievable.
Right? They didn't want to sign him in Washington. They didn't want to pay him the money. And he goes to the Islanders and takes a team that was at the bottom of that division and immediately saw results the first year. They become this defensive-minded team, right, where it's so hard for them to concede these goals and they make it be. I mean, if they score two, they're going to win most nights if they can get two, or at least force the game to overtime and pick up a point.
Absolutely right. And you mentioned Barry Trotz. I don't think people realize when you look at the all-time wins list in the National Hockey League, Barry Trotz is in the top five.
Think about how successful he was with that expansion team in Nashville. What was he there, 12, 14 years?
Absolutely. Washington, they win a Stanley. It's amazing to me, you win a Stanley Cup, you don't re-sign him, you go to the Islanders, they improve their goal differential by 100, the largest margin in a single season, and now you look at this team, nobody's talking about it. We talk Tampa, we talk Colorado, we talk VGK. But the New York Islanders are a very dangerous team to be able to hoist the cup this year.
Well, they're very tough. You're going to meet them in a playoff matchup, and it's going to be a grinding series. You're going to have to beat them. You're going to have to be able to take advantage of power plays, get them in the box, get them 5-on-4 in order to score because they just don't give up goals. And both their goaltenders are strong. You talk about tandems, right? In today's NHL, especially with the shortened season and a lot of one day off between games, you have to have two effective goaltenders.
You're absolutely right. Al Arbor in the days of the drive for five in the Islanders, Mike Bossy, Brian Trottier, Dennis Potvin. I'm sure the people in Long Island are just waiting and excited with the great opportunity for this team to really get back there. When you look at the odds right now on this team, it's really an opportunity for them. They sit at 56 points, 26-10-4 overall, what this team's been able to accomplish.
You know, you look at the NHL East standings. Remember, the Bruins have played less games because of COVID, and they have a lot of games left against the Sabres. So don't count the Bruins out there. I tried to play against them last night. They had the fill-in goaltender played well again, got down 3-0. The Caps charged back, but it wasn't enough, eventually losing 4-2. I thought the Bruins were going to be a team to fade this year. I think I was wrong. Flyers have been very, very, very disappointing. A team on the rise, they're probably not going to make the playoffs this year. The Devils. The Devils have played much better.
Blackwood's been outstanding.
He's been outstanding. I'd look for this team, not this year, but next year, project out this team, and I think that calming presence of having a Lindy Ruff behind the bench is very important for them. Pittsburgh, they're just not consistent enough. Yeah. I mean, they go through these spurts where they give up so many goals. So, I mean, this division, I think, really comes down to the Islanders, Caps, and Bruins.
You know what? I thought you were going to say Buffalo Sabres on the rise because you technically wouldn't be wrong. They can't play any worse than they have all year.
That's right.
So I thought that was a team to keep in mind there. You mentioned them. But I'll tell you, you were right on the Flyers. You said all along you weren't a believer in them when they got off to a fast start and they've struggled.
Well, this goaltending just hasn't been there, right? I mean, Brian Elliott's been a lot better than Carter Hart. Carter Hart's sophomore campaign has been atrocious.
You're absolutely right. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit golf with McDonald's number one customer. Matt Eumanns joins us next.
It's Masters Weekend, and no one has better golf betting coverage than VSiN. Subscribers have access to our full Masters coverage on VSiN.com with current odds, analysis of key golfers, and picks from our experts for each day of the tournament. It's the first major of the year, and our golf team is already in midseason form, so make sure to start your VSiN free trial today. Sign up at VSiN.com/subscribe. Speaking about VSiN having the best golf coverage anywhere, Long Shots, just Long Shots, forget about anything else, could solidify that case. And we have on the host of Long Shots, the host of My Guys in the Desert, former host of The Edge, morning, noon, and night, Matt Eumanns. Matty, welcome into the Nuts.
Hey, it's great to be back on with you guys. Mike, you read that promo with unmatched enthusiasm. I could hear the excitement in your voice, but it's great to have Masters Week here. And it seems like we just did this, and we did 5 months ago, but that's okay. It's a Super Bowl of golf betting, and I don't think anybody in the world puts up a better golf futures board than the Circa Sportsbook.
Thank you. Well, we're proud of that. We're proud of what Matt Metcalf has done. We're proud of the way, you know, we offer the most competitive odds and the least takeout in the business. So far, Matty, we're through about a round and a third here, as some are still to tee off in round two today. Anything that surprised you so far?
You know, I thought Justin Rose would come back to the pack, and he did. He went from 7-under to 4-under, but then, you know, on the back nine, that's the second day in a row where he's been lights out. So he's back to 7-under, and that surprised me a little bit because Wes Reynolds said yesterday he predicted a 75 for Rose today, and I said, nah, I think he's going to shoot par, maybe 1-under par. I don't think he's going to blow up that badly. that looked like he was going to blow up when he made the turn. But then he got back to 7-under, so that surprised me a little bit. But Cameron Smith is making a run. I've got him at 70-1. That was a bet at Circus Sports. So it's good to see him in the top 10. He tied for second in November. Aussies and Englishmen play well on this course. South Africans do, too. You always have to consider those guys in your handicap, not just the popular American players. But Cameron Smith is in there, and Tony Finau. How about that? Top 10 Tony has made a run. It looked like the way he started this tournament, he was going to be no factor. And he came into Augusta really in pretty poor form. But there he is right again, right there again in the top 10. And a little surprised to see him make that run today. That's the big thing on Friday. You're trying to see who's going to make the move up, who's going to make the move down. And Bryson DeChambeau is one guy a lot of people are going to be watching today. DeChambeau's a clown. He's like a circus freak out there. He's just trying to, you know, see how fast, how hard he can swing the club and think he's going to out-muscle the competition in the course. And it really doesn't work that way in golf. There are going to be tournaments where he shows up and he's dominant, but that's going to be rare when it happens. And I think the media hype's got out of control on this guy. And he's one of my favorite golfers to fade in matchups. But he's recovered a little bit today. I think he's, when I came on with you guys, I think he was 2-under for today's round, so he's 2-over for the tournament.
Matt, you mentioned matchups. Let's talk about individual matchups. When you look to bet some of these on a Saturday or even going into a Sunday or even today, how much stock do you put into the performance based on what transpired the previous day on the 18 holes, or if it's going into Saturday, what they did on the previous 36, or is it strictly just based on the individual matchup and maybe the last 18 holes?
No, you're right. I think you absolutely have to emphasize what the golfer did on Friday's rounds. If a guy goes out Friday and shoots a lights-out score, let's say 64, 65, that's the type of guy you want to fade on Saturday and find somebody who you think is who's going to put up a strong score on Saturday, who's maybe matched up against him. Those are the type of things I look for. I don't bet a lot of those types of matchups. It's really hard to find one you like, but yes, I'm basically looking to fade a guy who went really low on Friday or really low on Thursday. You're looking to fade him in the next round. And that's a lot of what I look for in matchups within, you know, a tournament. Coming into the tournament, my favorite matchup was Spieth over McIlroy. And just because Spieth is such a horse for the course at Augusta, and he's in great form, and Rory has not been a horse for the course at Augusta at all. And he has not been a very good form. Rory's just a name. He's kind of like a name brand that people still bet him because he won several majors. Amal, I think you were in high school the last time Rory won a major. That was like 2014. Okay. Not quite that, but it's been a long time since Rory's had success, but people continue to bet him. They bet him and bet him. And I don't understand why. So, you know, that's the type of guy I was looking to fade coming into the tournament in a matchup. But within the tournament, yeah, I'm looking to fade a guy who shoots a really low score one day because he's not going to back that up the next day. And that's one of the best ways to bet golf.
Well, because they don't want to lose on Rory on Saturday or Sunday. No, they know it's over on Friday.
What's that?
I said they know it's over with Rory on Friday. They don't even want to waste time on the weekend. That's why they bet Rory.
Yeah, exactly. I really don't understand the fascination with so many golf handicappers have with Rory. You know, and John Rahm's kind of been the same deal. I don't dislike Rahm at this point as much, but, you know, I don't bet Rahm either because Rahm and Rory just don't find the win column. And you got guys who bet them every week, and they're in that 10 to 15 to 1 odds range. And that's just, I don't think that's a good strategy at all.
We're speaking with Matt Youmans, host of My Guys in the Desert, VSiN senior editor. Matt, you've really excelled under the mentorship of Ben Fox, our VP here at VSiN. You bet Cameron Smith at 48-1 before the tournament started. Played very well, currently at 9-1.
Yeah, you bet Cameron Smith at 48-1, or I did?
You did. You got the ticket.
No, I bet him at 70-1.
Wow.
I bet him at 70-1 at Circus Sports. But I had the list to pick at 48-1 because the 71 odds were long gone. So I listed the pick at 40-1, 48-1, because it does no good to list prices that are, you know, been snapped up a month or two previous. So yeah, 70-1 was out there when Cameron Smith was playing well at Riviera in early February. Riviera is a course that really correlates to Augusta, and Cameron Smith finished second, tied for second at Augusta in November, and that's the time when you had to bet Cameron Smith. So I got him at 70-1. He didn't play well yesterday, but he's really playing well today and making a move up the leaderboard. So, Mike, that ticket, that bet's alive again. And it's good to see some of these guys like Cameron Smith and Justin Thomas, who I bet on, play well here early on a Friday.
Yeah, absolutely. They've done a tremendous job here. Matt, thank you so much, as always, for joining us. We really appreciate it with the insights. And good luck on your Cameron Smith at 70-1. Hopefully you hit that one.
All right, you bet. Thanks, guys. Appreciate
it. Thank you. Look forward to listening to Matt this afternoon, 2 to 4 Pacific, 5 to 7 Eastern on My Guys in the Desert.
Yeah, does a terrific job, him and Wes Reynolds, especially with the golf insights. These guys and Brady Cannon, those three, really on top of it. And I love this one. I hope it comes to fruition for him at 70-1. Really a good pick so far. Things trending in the right direction.
Yeah, well, all of us here at Circus Sports are rooting for you.
Yeah. When we come back, we're going to get... by the way, that sounded so disingenuous, but I'll leave it at that. When we come back, we're going to get into the Palm Reader's playbook. That's next.
Play Sugar House.
With exclusive bets, daily specials, odds boost, and the largest offer of live in-play options, BetRivers Sportsbook is the industry leader when it comes to online sports betting. And to make your experience even more rewarding, BetRivers offers the most live streams of major sports, instant payouts, and only one-time playthrough. BetRivers, your hometown sportsbook. Offer valid in Colorado, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Virginia, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. Available at PlaySugarHouse.com in New Jersey. Must be 21. Gambling problem? Illinois, New Jersey, Pennsylvania. Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT. In Colorado, 1-800-522-4700. In Michigan, 1-800-270-7117. Virginia, 1-888-532-3500. And in Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. We'd normally start with the Palm Reader's playbook, but since I have a lot less plays than you, we're going to start with mine in the all-in segment here. I've got one play in the National Hockey League. What are you looking at me for like that?
You said it like that's an oddity, so we're going to start with you. You always have less plays. Why aren't we starting with you every day?
Well, because it's the weekend, and, you know, we only have about 15 minutes remaining, so I'm not sure we can get through every game on board.
We got 10 remaining. Let's get to it.
Yeah. I've got the New York Islanders minus 140 here, trying to bounce back after a couple losses in a row here, so... Got the Islanders tonight at home. I like them minus 140. They've won 85% of their games at home. I think the trend continues in the right direction here with the Isles.
Yeah, I agree with you. I like the play. I didn't realize their home record was that good. You did a nice job on the research there, and they have two solid goalies. They're tough to score against, and 140 seems like a reasonable price.
Yeah, I think so, too. I thought this number would have been a little bit higher. So taking a look here, if you're going to play this one, take the Islanders. You can take this one probably up to about 150. And the money line right now at DraftKings minus 137, Rangers plus 118. All right, my man. It's a Friday, so go ahead and get everyone started. Let them get their pen and paper ready.
Yeah, the two-unit play is tomorrow in the Champions League, Wycombe and Luton Township. We went under 2.5 here, minus 130. I thought this game might be a flat 2 or lay 150 on the 2.5. Wycombe's been a very good under team in a competitive match, right, where one team is not favored heavily over the other. So we went under here. Lille, we talked about, that goes in about 15 minutes in France against Metz, who's ninth in the table. Lille... a couple points ahead of PSG, trying to lock up a League One title here. Very important to get the 3 points today. We laid 171 unit. Yankees 135 on the road at Tampa Bay. Richie Hill's my guy. I love Richie Hill. I think Richie Hill's an important guy to have on a roster for a playoff start. Boy, he struggled in that opener against the Marlins, who aren't really hitting the ball at all. I mean, every single inning, it was a workout. There were runners on base. He only ended up going four innings and gave up four earned. I think it's going to be a little bit tough for Richie Hill, especially if they think Richie Hill's going to make 30 starts this year. I don't think he's going to get there. I mean, I don't
either.
He made 30 starts over 12 years in the big leagues. Kluber looked good in his return outing for the Yankees, obviously coming over from Cleveland. Thought it was a pretty cheap price for probably the best lineup in baseball outside the Dodgers. So we laid it on the road there. Wheeler, you could argue that Wheeler had the most dominant performance of anybody. He went 8 innings. 10 strikeouts, one hit. I know they had the dueling no-hitters Saturday in Milwaukee with Berrios and Burns, who came back with a great effort yesterday. But Wheeler, now we're going to go on the road and get a cheap price with him. at Atlanta. He pitched, obviously, against the Braves in Philadelphia that first outing. I'm going to play it first five. Let's take the bullpens out of it. Minus 105. If you want to play it for the full game, you can get it at plus 113, plus 114. I'll go back to this wild game you went under the other night, and then they exploded with all those power play goals. I'm going to go back under. It's Talbot against Bennington, and Bennington played very well against the Knights. The Knights couldn't get anything going against him. Under 1.5 in the first period, minus 115. Then Man U and Tottenham at Hotspur Stadium on Sunday. This is a pick. It's actually plus 110. I'll take Tottenham. I think they're sitting on a big game here. Man U had that tune-up in Europa yesterday. They won 2-0 here. But I expect a big performance here, and at worst, maybe a push with Tottenham. If you think they can win the game, obviously you can get them at almost plus $2 on the three-way.
Yeah, plus 180 on Tottenham there, as you alluded to, and then, of course, plus 148 on Man United there. I love the draw, no bet.
That's essentially what I'm taking. Yeah. Pick them.
I think that's a good way to do that. I think there's really, because so many times you wind up with a draw in these games, so very critical. And, you know, when you see some of these games and a goal is scored early on and you fall behind, you just mentally you're like, oh, gosh, we've got to get two goals here.
Right?
It's like, it feels like it's over. So just something to pay attention to there if you're looking at betting some of these games over the weekend. Want to go back to a baseball game you referenced earlier, Mike. You like the Phillies with Zach Wheeler on the mound today in the first five innings, taking on the Atlanta Braves. I like this matchup. This should be a good one down in Atlanta. So, tell me a little bit more as to why you like the first five here. I know you're not a big fan of having the bullpens involved, but the Braves right now, not off to a fast start.
No, they're not off to a fast start. They didn't hit the ball at all. The Phillies swept them to open up. I looked at the total. It's Morton, right? Morton's going for the Braves, and that's why you're getting the decent price on Wheeler. But it's tough in Atlanta in that ballpark to play a 7.5, right, or a 3.5 for the first five innings. So that's why I wanted to go with the dog here. Wheeler was just really good. They had trouble putting the ball in play against him. There was a lot of swings and misses in that first start. Morton wasn't particularly that sharp. I believe he gave up three runs for the Braves in his first start against the Phillies. So I'll take it at a plus price that we can repeat the performance that we had to open the season.
You know, to me, Wheeler, when he's on his game, is as good as any pitcher in baseball. I mean, you could say that about several pitchers, but I'm talking really dominant stuff. 99-mile-an-hour fastball.
Movement.
Exactly. I was just about to say good movement. Really does a terrific job in terms of that. Want to go to a marquee game getting ready to start today. You mentioned earlier the Rich Hill, Corey Kluber situation. But when you look at this Yankees-Rays game, Mike, this is my big concern. This game goes at 3:10 Eastern, 12:10 Pacific time. By the way, I love on a Friday how we have these early, early starts. To me, Kluber is a guy that can have a real impact and really be a 1-2 combination with Gerrit Cole if the Yankees can get going. On the flip side, can this Rays team score with any kind of consistency?
Well, that's the problem. You saw they went to Boston. They had trouble scoring. Yeah. They really didn't score much outside of one game in Miami, right?
Exactly.
They just got the pitching to be able to win 2 out of 3 there. I thought, if you go and you go division by division and isolate one player, that's going to tell you how a race is going to go. I thought Corey Kluber is it in the AL East. Because if Kluber comes back to his form that he had before the injury, I don't think there's a competition in the AL East. I think it's a runaway for the Yankees. But if the Yankees don't get much depth at starting pitching, then maybe this division is up for grabs.
I would agree with you. I think Corey Kluber could be one of the biggest acquisitions of the offseason that really pays dividends. I want to ask you about Trevor Bauer and the baseball scenario there. What do you make of that? How much credence do you give to that? And just what's your gut feeling on what's going to happen?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, he's pitched well through his first two starts. So I don't, you know, with the issue is, I mean, he pitched very well in Colorado. He had the no-hitter going, and then he went 6 2/3, and he gives up the home run, but left that game leading 3-2 before Jensen blew it. I guess we still have to see. The sample size isn't big enough.
Yeah, absolutely. Dodgers at home today for the opener against the Washington Nationals. Huge favorites here of almost $3 with Walker Buehler going up against Joe Ross.
That was a pitching matchup 3 years ago in the playoffs in it where someone was hurt for, I think Strasburg was hurt, and Joe Ross had to fill in. I think it was a game 4 out of 5-game series and a division series. And Joe Ross pitched pretty well, but he was like a 350 dog that day against the Dodgers. And you get him up against Walker Buehler here for the Dodgers home opener, so you understand the price.
Yeah, the run line here is minus 141. I think the Dodgers are going to be a team, and I know some people don't like to play run lines, particularly in the National League with teams at home. You always reference teams at home in terms of the run line. But, Mike, I think when you look at these Dodgers prices, you only have two options. Either you're going to play the dog, or you got to play the Dodgers on the run line unless you're putting them in a parlay on the money line.
Yeah, I agree here. I would look at it. It's still 140, right?
It's still very high. Yeah.
I'm a Joe Ross guy. I think Joe Ross makes a good fifth starter. I mean, now right now he's not five because they got to move him up. But I think he's serviceable. You're only going to get five, maybe 5 1/3, 5 2/3 out of him. So if you're looking at it from that perspective that you like the dog, I would also play the first five here. I would also, I say, like Josh Tower said, the Dodger bullpen is very deep. The weakness is in the closer, Jansen.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, when you think about how dominant that bullpen has the chance to be this year, this is going to be a tough, tough team to beat. You're going to have to be around them in the ninth inning, then hope you can figure out a way to get a run or two to win the game.
That Tatis injury has really moved these odds, and we look at them via DraftKings to win the West. Remember, the Dodgers were about 220, 230 before the year to win the West, and now they've jumped up to 5-1. You have to lay minus $5 because of the Tatis injury, I think, is where you see that movement.
Yeah, but I didn't think the Padres were going to be able to win the division during the regular season. I thought the Padres, where their value was going to be in a four out of seven scenario, they would have an opportunity to knock off the Dodgers. Over 162, I think the Dodgers are going to be the better team. And you see it, as you alluded to, reflected in the odds. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to put minus $5 on the Dodgers at this point in time.
What are the D-backs? 200 to 1? I mean, they don't
they're
even
off
make the
They're off
sheet.
The board.
They don't make
they're off the
sheet.
Board, yeah. The odds are not long enough. They're like Leicester City. Mike, I want to hit one more game before we get out of here today. Mm-hmm. Houston hosting the Oakland A's here. Sean Manea gets an opportunity to bounce back. He really struggled in that first matchup against the Astros. Gave up 5 earned runs in 4 2/3 innings, including 2 bombs. And you've got Lance McCullers, who got off to a very fast start in his debut this year against Oakland, going 5 innings, 2 hits, and 1 run.
So we saw that first series in Oakland. The A's the A's were really awful. They weren't competitive, really, in any of the games. Houston, you know, scored 8 runs in every game. And then it continued last night, where Houston won easily. So, I mean, you're going to need to have a special performance out of Manaea tonight to really turn this thing around. And I think it's got to be in their heads now. They're 0-5 and haven't come close yet against the Astros.
Yeah, I think if they're going to get on track, I mean, even yesterday, where they score a couple of runs in the ninth inning, I mean, this offense really has not gotten anything going.
No, nothing. They really haven't. It was 6-0 for the longest time. The game was over early.
Is there going to be anybody that's a challenger in the West to the Houston Astros?
Well, you have to look at the Angels, right? I mean, we'll see if they can get some. They can get some starting pitching. Obviously, that lineup is loaded. Otani's hitting the ball, and he pitched well his first start. But I think that it will take extraordinary effort over the course of 162 games for that Angels starting rotation to hold up against to compete with the Astros. I just think this is another division where it's pretty much a foregone conclusion.
I tend to agree with you. And by the way, interesting structure of the series this weekend. You had a Thursday game, Friday, and Saturday. No Sunday game. Which is amazing to me.
Very odd. There's a lot of teams not playing today on Friday.
Yeah.
We saw almost all day games yesterday. This was the only night game.
Yeah, exactly.
Yesterday was Thursday night, and they got one game left.
Yeah, absolutely right. And, you know, you mentioned the Oakland A's in terms of their chances in this division. They're already sitting at 1-7. Astros at 6-1. I mean, I hate to say it, but these two games head-to-head against the Astros are very critical if the A's fancy any chance of winning this division.
Well, they're trying to stay in it already.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
5 games back this quick.
I mean, you're looking at leaving Houston at 1-9.
Yeah. The A's at plus 250 are a definite fade here, I think. I'd make the Angels a much shorter price than them right now.
I'm surprised the Astros are only minus 148. I think that's a good price on this team. A's at plus 250, no chance.
No,
yeah, Angels, you mentioned the plus $3 possibility. There's something to keep in mind. I think, unfortunately, the two West divisions are going to be complete runaways, and I think the National League East is probably going to be the most competitive division.
I'm surprised the Astros aren't closer to $3 to your point.
It's exactly. I mean, they have a real chance to put some distance between themselves and everyone else in that division as we continue to move forward. That's going to do it for the Nuts this week. Coming up next is Betting Across America here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.